CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Good morning and welcome to CityTalk's business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday I'll be taking a look at some of the week's big business stories and talking to some key personalities, decision makers and entrepreneurs who work in and influence Liverpool and the wider northwest region. This week, more twists and turns in the Liverpool Football Club takeover saga. Where does the club go from here? And whatever happens if the ambition to build a new stadium deal is dead in the water. The chief executive of the Northwest Development Agency, Stephen Broomhead, announced that he was retiring from the role. What did he and the agency achieve under his leadership, and how will the region cope without an organisation that has quite literally pumped millions of pounds into the Merseyside economy? And as we prepare for George Osborne's comprehensive spending review announcement on Wednesday, how bad will it be and what challenges will our city face? I'll also be getting some predictions for this afternoon's derby game from my guests this week, who are Liverpool City Council's Cabinet Member for Regeneration, Councillor Malcolm Kennedy, and business mentor John Haynes. Good morning to you, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Malcolm, if I may come to you first, because obviously your regeneration brief, it sounds as though that's a fairly wide portfolio to have responsibility for. Can you just tell the listeners what that job entails?
Well, largely the regeneration element relates to physical regeneration. So a lot of the development that's happened in the city over the last 10 years would have come under the Regeneration Directorate, for instance. So it also includes transport. So I often joke that if you get a parking ticket in Liverpool, I'm the one to blame. keeping the roads in good repair. I've got a really major problem with unadopted roads at the moment that we're trying to address. Keeping the prime roads fit for purpose so traffic can move in and out of the city efficiently. And a lot of the strategical work, I mean, a core document that I'm looking at the moment is called Liverpool's Core Strategy, and that is really the spatial strategy for Liverpool, how Liverpool will develop now and in the future. So it is quite wide, it's quite extensive, but very fundamental to the development of the city.
Yeah, it's a very broad agenda that you're having to deal with there, Malcolm. And as you say, there's been an awful lot of physical regeneration of the city over the past 10 years, particularly in the city centre. Nevertheless, there have been experiences, property developers particularly will relay to me, about how slow planning processes can often be in this city. Is that something that the new administration is looking to address?
Certainly. In fact, we're addressing it at the moment, and it's one of the things that the interim director of regeneration, that Nick Kavanagh, who's joined us on a part-time basis from Knowsley while we seek to appoint a full-time director. That's one of the things that he's concentrating on at the moment. There are many things the planning department's done right, and this is not a criticism of each individual as planners. I think there is a thought that planning really needs to get behind regeneration. And it needs to not just be a separate and independent aspect of what goes on, but serves the purpose of regeneration. And certainly getting the time down in which people are seen is going to be a high priority for us.
Mm. Yeah, I do think that sometimes it's been seen as a barrier to development rather than a department, if you like, that's looking to enable things to happen, even if it means developers having to tweak their initial plans. I think the big criticism has been, you know, an awful lot of money is often spent on architects' drawings, so on and so forth. And then you get to the 11th hour almost, and the planners say, well, we're not quite happy with that. And that's what we need to see changed. I don't think anybody's expecting a carte blanche on you'll get planner permission for anything, but perhaps a little bit better in terms of dialogue and communication.
No, I think we've been listening to people like yourself, Frank, who've made that point again and again, and we are taking that seriously. There are always different interests in planning. You know, there are issues sometimes about local residents' interests and things like that which come into play. And of course the planning process, when it gets to the planning committee, is independent of the council. It's got a semi-judiciary function really there. And it's not for the cabinet member for regeneration to tell the planning committee what it should do. But what I think what we are looking to do is to help people get to see a planner earlier in the process, to for that planner to be assigned to them to work with them on the development of that project, so it's likely to hit less problems as things move on. And of course, there are some big projects and small projects. It's about prioritising as well. Which are the important projects of the city, and do we spend the correct amount of time on those issues? So we are looking at all of these aspects, and I think you will see some improvement as time moves on. Mm.
I suppose the mitigation from the planner's perspective will be, because there was so much happening during that past decade, Liverpool One being the most obvious, but lots of other things as well, the arena, the transformation really of the waterfront. Maybe they will feel that they were not necessarily as healthily resourced as they might have been during that period. And certainly again, planning officers used to complain to me that it was difficult for them to respond in the timescales that we were demanding, simply because of the volume of work that they were having to do. Hopefully that will continue, but it's unlikely, I guess, that we're going to see the same sort of growth, certainly in the short term. Are there any big projects that your department are looking at this moment in time that you think, well, actually, we might just be able to pull that off?
I think developers are always coming to the City Council. I personally, sometimes you can't say who you've been
around.
I
mean, you
because there's commercial factors. But I mean, one of the first things I had to do when I became the cabinet member was to take a team of businessmen around all the major development sites in the city, of which we have a few, and they had, you know, millions to invest. So we were really wanting to put out the red carpet for them. And people who want to invest in Liverpool, as far as I'm concerned, and while I'm the cabinet member for regeneration, will have the red carpet put out for them. I mean, we welcome investors to this city, and we want them to feel that they're well treated when they come here. And if I hear of any instances where they feel they've been less well treated, then I will certainly be looking to that in a very serious manner. We can't afford in the current economic situation to drive investors away from Liverpool.
There does seem to be a shift in terms of culture, even at this early stage of the new administration at the council, and certainly the welcome that people that we've actually introduced into the city, potential investors again, has been far more positive than perhaps has been the case in the past. Where do you think Liverpool Vision eventually will end up sitting in all of this? Because I know Joe Anderson and I have had a conversation and not necessarily reached the same conclusions, but nonetheless, Vision has been, I think, a force for good. And, you know, from a private sector perspective, it's all about people and personalities at the end of the day, I suppose, Malcolm. Mm. Is there going to be a future for those individuals? And if so, as I say, where do you think they'll fit in the new structures?
Well, I mean, the Liverpool Vision situation is under discussion at the moment. I think Joe said recently that there's a lot we can learn from Liverpool Vision, and I fully endorse that comment. I'm a great fan of Max Steinberg, for instance. I remember remarking to Steve Broomhead when, in the early days of our administration, that I thought it was a bit of a coup getting somebody of the quality of Max Steinberg into that position. I think the key thing is what business wants, really. And I think business has to say what it wants. And I think we as a council have to react to that. There has been a concern over duplication of functions.
Yep.
We've both got development offices in both in the council, and we are in a situation in which we've got to save money. I don't think whether it's in or out is the key thing. That I keep saying it's whether business is happy to deal with the organisation which is there. And I certainly hope there's a future for Liverpool Vision. I do know that there's been talk of Liverpool Vision assisting us with our replacement buildings, schools for the future. There's been discussion about whether it can take the lead on culture and tourism, for instance. And so these discussions indicate that the administration as a whole does see a future for Liverpool Vision. But as I say, where it sits in or out of the council is less than important than business has confidence in the organisation it's dealing with. And I think business has to tell us what it wants in that respect.
Mm. No, I couldn't agree more. And when you talk about culture and tourism, I would probably throw in with investment into that pot as well, because, again, I think the team that's over at Vision actually understand what's required in terms of attracting those investors and, more importantly, reacting to them in a positive manner. Mm. And again, you know, not wishing to break any confidences, but the people that we've identified with serious cash to invest in this city have been treated really well by Vision and its officers during this period of negotiation. And I do think that the private sector, as I say, see Liverpool Vision and Max Steinberg and his team as a force for good. I suppose my only sort of disagreement with Joe in terms of the whole bring it back into the council scenario is it would be great if Liverpool Vision's culture was then translated in the rest of the local authority. I suppose, as I say, my concern is that Liverpool Vision gets consumed then by this big local authority monster, which all local councils are. It's not just Liverpool, and it loses that little bit of private sector edge, if you like, that it appears to have at the moment.
I think when business people have got millions to invest, it's not sufficient to take them up to the third floor of Millennium House. Mm. I think that business people are used to dealing in a certain environment, and they're not used to local authority culture. And I take your point that... And perhaps this is what Joe meant when he said we've got a lot to learn from Liverpool Vision and the approach that Liverpool Vision has had to business. And I certainly would not want to lose that.
Just moving on to perhaps another exciting development that we may see in the not-too-distant future, Peel and their hopes for the waterfront development. Is that something, I know they've had planning permission now granted over on the Wirral, they're looking at doing something in Liverpool as well. In reality, do you think that's something that's going to happen in the short to medium, or are we looking very long term for that particular thing to come?
No, a planning application is due to come in very soon. I think it will be well received. I'm excited by it. I do keep saying that a 30-year plan is all well and good, but please can I see what's going to happen after 5 years? 30 years' time, I'll be 86, and hopefully might be around to see the completion of the development, but not necessarily so.
You'll be Lord Mayor then, Mark.
Well, I might accept a nomination when I'm 86. I've no plans to accept any nominations like that at the present time. But I'm excited by it. I think Liverpool should be excited by it. Mm. I think the work of the planning department with I think Liverpool Vision have been involved as well, and Peel, to bring it to a kind of Liverpool proportion scheme, if you like, has been time well spent. The City Council is excited about this development. I think English Heritage's objections have largely been dealt with. I think things like the viewpoint. But I was looking at a picture yesterday, Frank, and I had my attention drawn to somebody who'd taken pictures of Liverpool in the early morning as the sun rose, and taken obviously from where you get the best view of Liverpool, which is across the water. And I was just struck by how much the new buildings had actually improved Liverpool's waterfront, in my view. It added to the interest of it. We can't keep Liverpool in aspic, as it were, and Liverpool must keep on developing. So this is, I think this is a very exciting development.
Yeah, very much so. And do you know what? I couldn't help but look at the opening credits to Boys from the Black Stuff, which is currently being repeated on BBC4, I think it is. And what a fantastic series that was that Alan Bleasdale wrote all those years ago. And obviously it's the old waterfront. And the place just looks so depressed. I mean, John, I'll bring you in a moment, but the place, you know, when we talk about transformation, you know, my kids look at that and those opening credits and they can't believe that is Liverpool. They would say, well, where's that? Well, that was what Liverpool was like back in 1983, 84. It wasn't that long ago. And in fact, beyond the 80s, that waterfront, other than the Albert Dock, very little had happened. And John, you know, you will remember the 80s well because you were working and living here at that time. And it was a very depressing place to be at points of the 80s, wasn't it?
It certainly was, Frank, and you're quite right about Boys from the Black Stuff, and you sit there in amazement. But at the time, entrepreneurs just got on with it. We didn't know any difference, and it was, I would say, that was the backbone of Liverpool's real growth, because it was a hard time, it was a desperate time. I remember I got made redundant, and we had recessions going on. It was the era of Margaret Thatcher. But I tell you what, we seemed to just pick ourselves up, dust ourselves down. We weren't too worried about the environment. It was about survival in those days. But the transformation now is just literally quite remarkable. And when you look back now and all those people who hung in there and they had this courage to stay and learn new skills, they were the start of what Liverpool is today. It was a remarkable time, but the transformation is quite breathtaking.
It's an interesting point, actually, because I suppose we all look upon that period in Liverpool's history with some despondency, not just because of the economic situation, but the politics around in the city at the time as well were just an absolute nightmare. Whichever part of the political spectrum that you were on, you know, it wasn't good news that our city stood out as a beacon against the national government. And I don't think anybody disagreed more with that government than I did at the time. But whether Liverpool's response to that was the most pragmatic, we could debate, I suppose, all day. But what you're saying there, John, is that in fact, you know, as individuals, a lot of the citizens of Liverpool just decided, well, we just have to park all that political stuff.
That's right.
Because we've still got rents to pay, mortgages to pay. We've got to work and we're going to go out and earn a crust.
Exactly, Frank. There's some incredible people in the city now. I've done it well, like you, a friend of ours, Eddie Reed. So me and Eddie were involved in it at that time, and it was bad, it was bleak, it was hard. Our politics from the city was quite remarkable. I remember going down to London once and I was treated like an alien. Mind you, I think I still am, actually. But when I was down there, from Liverpool and all these politics and all this and this, what's going on. But you're right, Frank, we had to dig deep. We had to find our inner soul and we had to reskill ourselves. And it was like a team effort. We're not going to let London beaters, we're not going to let the government beaters, we're going to keep going forward. And it was a hard time, but looking back, it was an exciting time. And I still meet up with the boys from the Black Stuff days, and we say, yeah, we got through this, and we're proud of what Liverpool has done now. It was.
Malcolm, I know you were around at that time, weren't you, in the city, and we had some lively discussions and debates taking place, both within the Labour Party and within Liverpool as a city itself. But when you look at where the economic situation is at the moment, we're told that we're in, you know, the biggest economic crisis that we've ever experienced. You know, there was this banking crash. We've got the spending review coming up on Wednesday, as I mentioned in my introduction. And yet, Liverpool doesn't feel as depressed as it did back then. We seem to have been able to respond far more positively in this recession than we have in past recessions. Are you fearful that some of the policies that may be going to be adopted by George Osborne on Wednesday may see us slip back somewhat?
I'm certainly fearful that it might stall the process. There was an interesting piece written by Matthew Paris recently in The Times when he must have got stuck in the traffic, I think, on his way to the Lib Dem conference or something like that. But he wasn't in a very good mood when he wrote his article, and he said something about, does regeneration, when's it going to finish? Does a regeneration ever stop? And, I mean, of course, the answer is that it doesn't. That you've constantly got to be regenerating a city. And as you deal with certain problems, other problems come to the fore in which we deal with them. What John was saying there about business people get on with things, during the 80s, local people got on with it as well. I mean, I remember standing on Vauxhall Road in the 80s and looking at the old Love Lane factory, the old Tate and Lyle factory, which was still there. And I was actually on my way with Tate and Lyle workers up to Glasgow for a march against the rising unemployment levels at that time. And the transformation now, when you look across where the Love Lane factory was to the World Habitat Award-winning Eldonian estate, shows that local people could get on with things. And, you know, the driving leadership of community organisations, particularly then the Eldonians and people like Tony McGann, but I remember Mickey Keating and other people at that time, John Livingston, lots of people that were involved. These were ordinary people who determined that the situation wasn't going to get them down. And Liverpool still got that. Mm. I mean, that is still there in Liverpool. The last council were extremely lucky. The last administration, they came in, I think, 98. I was the only Labour gain that year, and they took overall control. At that time, they were coming into the second tranche of European funding, and they had a new Labour government, which diverted resources to the deprived cities of the north in a way that hadn't been done for decades. And that's why you see the transformation of Liverpool today. We've got tougher times ahead, but I think we're in a situation now where hopefully we'll be able to withstand them. And from my political perspective, that we have a new Labour administration in the future that can carry on that work.
Mm. I also think that the difference this time around is, yet we've got a Conservative, Lib Dem coalition government. We've got a Labour council again. But we don't appear to have that confrontational approach from our local leadership that was clearly apparent back in the 80s. Do you think that's likely to continue to be the approach?
I think that has to be the approach. I think we'll say where we think they're going wrong. And I think at times we'll protest rather vociferously about what's going on, but I don't think we'll be alone in that. But I think we did learn a lesson from the 80s. I mean, some of us, and me included, warned that the approach being taken would not yield the results it was hoped it would yield. But I think that we learned that a degree of cooperation, where it's possible and where the government is willing to work with us. I think the problem will be if they just don't care. Mm. I think that might be an issue. And at the moment, the jury's open on that one. Mm. I think even in Mrs. Thatcher's era, there were people within that government who actually realised it wasn't in their interests for Liverpool to go down the pan, as it were.
Heseltine was.
Heseltine being a case in point.
John, do you think that, you know, as Malcolm says, the conflict that we embarked upon at that time was perceived in the city as negative? Or do you actually think that at that time, you know, there were a lot of Liverpudlians who were up for the fight?
You're right there, Frank. They say any city is driven by leadership and emotion. And I think we entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs of Liverpool felt if there was a wrongdoing, we got together. And at the time, we were supporting the council at the time. We just felt, everything was stacked up against Liverpool. So we got behind the council. I know there was divisions and what was said was wrong, but it was a strange situation because we had to get on with things. But we come together as a city. It was the arguments were going on. We were never out the press. But in a strange way, it got us together in a city. But I think now, though, as TJ Watson said, you know, the leader of IBM, he said, it's all right for a city to fail as long as it fails in a forward direction, as long as we've learned from our mistakes and we don't carry on repeating the same mistakes. And I just feel now, possibly with the city leaders we've got now, they're more educated, they've learned from past mistakes, they're good at negotiation, they've got tremendous leadership skills, unless they don't fall into the intelligent trap and they don't stop learning. But I think we have learned. At the time, it was a tremendous, I would say, emotional experience to dig deep and find ourselves. But the city, I think, is now learned from it. And I'm just hoping now our leaders now are keep educating themselves, and no more confrontation. That's the stupid way now. It's a win-win negotiation, but I think we've got the people at the helm to do it.
Well, hopefully so. And the other thing that emerged this week was some possibility. This is in no way definite from what I've picking up from the various reports, but some possibility that we are actually going to possibly, as I say, benefit from some additional European money. To about $500 million. Do you know anything about this, Malcolm?
I don't know much more than you at the moment, Frank. I did read that in the press. I think it would be good news. I think the argument was from Europe, and this would be a European decision, not a national government decision, that yes, as it, in the past, Objective One money was given because Liverpool fell below 75% of the average of GDP figures. There's also recognition in Europe that you need to back winners and you need to have a competitive face outwards. And of course, Europe isn't just on its own anymore. We live in a global economy and Europe is in a competitive situation. So what are the attack brands of Europe? I think Liverpool could be an attack brand for Liverpool, for Europe. It's known throughout America in a way that places like Manchester aren't, for instance. And I think it's a wise move if Europe wished to support us in this way.
And it'd be a tremendous financial windfall at the moment, wouldn't it?
It certainly was. We'd have to be careful what we use it for, and I'm sure Europe would direct to an extent how it was used, and certainly developing our waterfront economy, I think, would be an important aspect for me.
And transport infrastructure.
Yeah, absolutely, but I'm thinking of the ocean liners and the turnaround facilities and all of those kind of things that we need in Liverpool. I think something like that would be, you know, very useful. We are on the northwestern extremities of Europe, as it were, and it certainly is a gateway into Europe. So that would be kind of one area that I would like to see expanded and maybe help with this resource, if it comes to pass.
Yeah. John, European funding, we've debated this in the past. I know the first tranche particularly, I think many of us criticised as to maybe not being used in the most advantageous ways possible. Even in the second 7 years, we can point to particular projects, initiatives that perhaps we didn't get best value for. But again, going on your earlier comment about experiences, we did seem to get better in terms of the usage of that cash as the programme developed.
It certainly, in the early days, Frank, it was absolutely appalling. The people in charge of that funding really let the city down. We won't mention any names, but they just let the city totally down. It was misspent, people getting misled, and it was just total chaos. And I don't know how we even got more tranches off the European funding, because they must have looked at us and said, what the heck are you doing? But we learned from it, we grew from it, some people resigned and we went forward through it. And then, as you quite rightly said, Frank, now, the last quarter, it was really getting used correctly in the right places at the right time for the most needy. And I just think now, I love what Malcolm's just said about the situation. Liverpool being an attack brand. Oh, I love that word. That's honestly an attack brand, Malcolm. Suddenly we've come from the boys in the black stuff. We've regrouped. We've re-energised the city. We've got this magnificent structure now. Now, we could be the leading city with this new tranche of funding. With the waterfront, we can increase it. And it would be good investment. for the European funding. Mm. I'm really excited about that, what you've just said.
Well, well, thanks. Maybe the press will start using it as well. Yeah. And
well, I think that's where we want to see, you know, the Liverpool brand take. And I think it is time for us to now start shouting about some of our achievements. And hopefully, you know, we can get some of that European cash help. Anyway, we're coming, approaching the first break of the programme. And we were talking there about the 80s. One thing that wasn't depressing about Liverpool in the 80s was our performance on the football field, when both Everton and Liverpool enjoyed unprecedented success. However, things are slightly different when they meet today. They'll be in a relegation battle, would you believe? But the big news has been Liverpool's takeover, and that's something I'll be speaking to with my guests after this short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, welcome back to the show. And of course, the big news this week across the city has been the twists and turns in the saga of the Liverpool Football Club takeover, which has turned into somewhat of a farce. On Thursday afternoon, I spoke to football finance expert Professor Tom Cannon about what his thoughts were on the latest developments. Well, Tom, it's nice to speak to you. Having a look at what's happening at the moment, and obviously I think there's going to be yet another court hearing before the weekend. But in the absence of knowing the outcome of that, where do you think things currently sit as far as Liverpool Football Club is concerned?
Well, I think you summarised it well, Frank, when you talked about twists and turns and degenerating into a farce. I think the one thing that is clear, that Hicks and Gillette have no real interest in the future success of Liverpool Football Club. I think if they'd had any respect for that, I think they would have walked away when the High Court judge basically exposed them as people who had no respect for corporate governance, never mind respect for Liverpool Football Club.
Is this Texan injunction that's being imposed likely to stand the test of legal processes, do you think?
I think it might stand that test temporarily, because clearly both RBS and New England Sports Ventures will not want to get themselves in a kind of transatlantic wrangle. I think it may well be a temporary process, because it is by definition a temporary injunction. Of course, it's associated with the fact that Hicks and Gillette are suing pretty well everybody who's involved. I think even the guys who are selling the box office, I think, will probably be included in this in their attempt to raise their $1 billion of damages. But I don't think that it'll stand the test of time. I think it may well produce a short delay in the completion of the process, because clearly the board meeting last night couldn't resolve anything because of this temporary injunction. And I think what will have to happen is the injunction will have to be challenged, ideally then lifted, and then the board can make a firm decision within days.
Mm. Where does it leave the club in terms of this administration issue? Does that still rear its head, or would the Premier League look upon this as a temporary delay in what will ultimately lead to the inevitable sale, I guess, of the club?
Well, the bank always has this nuclear option of forcing the club into administration. And if the club was forced into administration, then you could have what's sometimes called a breakfast administration, which is very brief and short term. But under those circumstances, I personally don't believe that the Premier League would have any choice but to impose a points penalty. Therefore, I don't believe it is in the interest of RBS to put Liverpool into administration. You don't have to press for administration immediately. I don't think they will. I think they'll wait to see the outcome of the challenge to the injunction, whether that's lifted quickly and whether the board can move quickly. I think they'll give the board a bit more time and give New England Sports Ventures a bit more time to resolve this issue. But, of course, the other issue in the background is, of course, the Singaporean offer from Mr. Lim and, of course, the return of US hedge funds into the equation.
I was going to ask you about that. I mean, because I know you follow very closely the movers and shakers, the potential investors into football clubs. Do we know much about this Mr. Lim, the latest guy to appear on the scene of this, as we say, bit of a saga now?
Well, I think Mr. Lim has credibility. I mean, I don't think that Martin Broughton or the board would have said earlier in the process that they had two credible offers if they didn't believe he was credible. He has sports businesses. He knows the football industry, obviously from a particular angle, which is the retail side and the retail of kits. And, of course, there is this involvement with Manchester United on the sidelines. So he does know the industry. But he has nothing like the credibility of New England Sports Ventures in developing an actual sports business, a franchise, as the Americans like to call them. I don't think he's ever developed a core business, which is what running Liverpool would be, in the way that New England Sports Ventures are. But he has got resources. He is willing to pay a bit more. And therefore, clearly, there may well be a need to hear his case. But I still believe that New England Sports Ventures will proceed and it will go through. I think the more worrying dimension is these US hedge funds who may well talk long about what they're willing to put into the club. But of course, the hedge funds are very, very return oriented. And I can't believe that would be good for the club.
And are RBS looking at this from the perspective of what is good for Liverpool Football Club, or are they simply wanting to get the money back as quickly as possible?
I think their absolute priority is getting the money back as quickly as possible. I think everything else has to come because basically you and me own it in large part, so they don't have a lot of choice. Having said that, I think they have given Martin Broughton responsibility. They have put their trust in him and Ayers and Pearslow. And I still believe that although their first responsibility is, in a sense, to their owners, I do think they want the best outcome from the for the club.
I think Broughton's actually handled himself remarkably well through the process, hasn't he? And the other two guys there you mentioned as well. And Ian Ayers, I know, is not just an employee of Liverpool Football Club, but a huge fan as well. So they will be looking at what is the longest-term interest for Liverpool here, won't they?
I absolutely agree. I think that's why they've made the decision they've made. I mean, it would have been easier, I guess, to accept Mr. Lim's offer as it is in cash terms a bit larger. And certainly it would have been easy for them to go back to him and look for a cash buyer. I think they have chosen an organisation that, with the fair wind, and if they deliver their promises, could actually produce a very, very positive future for Liverpool. But the fans will have to be patient because I think they have to appreciate that the turnaround will not be immediate. It's not like turning a ferry boat around. It's more like turning an oil tank around.
Mm. Well, we know all about patience, Tom, both being Evertonians. And obviously the show goes out on Sunday. It's Derby Day. Is there any news on that front as far as potential investors for Everton Football Club is concerned?
Well, I think Bill's been led down a lot of garden paths recently, and I think he's therefore viewing any potential investors with a certain amount of jaundice, because I think just listening to his interview recently in the local press, I think it illustrated that. The truth is there aren't many around. I mean, even for a club like Liverpool, which is a giant, I mean, you know, as Evertonians, you can't ignore the fact, as one might try to, 15 championships and 5 European Cups and X million fans around the world. And they've taken 6 months to find an acceptable buyer. And if you then place it in the context of when David Moore's left, you could argue it's taken them 4 years to find an acceptable buyer. So these things take a long time unless you're very, very lucky, as occurred at Manchester City.
You see, a lot of Evertonians who are listening to this will point to other clubs as well, won't they, who have identified buyers. I'm thinking about Blackburn. Apparently Indians are interested in buying them. I mean, Blackburn doesn't seem to be a particularly attractive proposition. And there's not many clubs, is there, in the Premier League now that haven't been able to find new investors, new owners during the past decade or so.
But if you look at the track record, it's very mixed. Even if you look at Aston Villa, who got in a seemingly credible buyer, the reality is that he, in the face of Martin O'Neill's expectations, has suddenly closed the door on the kind of ambitions that Martin O'Neill had. The Blackburn deal might, and it might not go through. Frankly, if you look at who's delivered in terms of new buyers, apart from loading clubs with debt, I would say that the only one who's delivered actually so far with bells on has been Abramovich at Chelsea. Even in the case of Manchester City, they still haven't won anything, albeit they've spent a lot of money, and I expect they will win things because of the amount of money. But there have been an awful lot more sad stories, I think, than success stories when people have come in. You look at Mike Ashley at Newcastle, you look at what's happened at Portsmouth, then you look through an awful lot of clubs. Fulham, for example, all right, they look good at times because they're owned by allegedly one of the richest men in Britain. But then you look at the performance of the club, it's very, very mixed. It's very cautious in terms of investment. New buyers are not necessarily the solution to a club's future, even if you get someone with seemingly limitless resources, like as a cared at City. In the majority of cases, these new buyers come in and they're interested in a return for them rather than a return for the club.
And that's one thing you can never accuse Bill Kenwright of.
Well, we'll see on Sunday.
Yeah, well, just on that note, and I'm going to let you go now, Tom, it's always good to talk to you, but prediction for Sunday?
Well, I have to say, I go into every derby match full of pessimism and a sense of despair. I don't like the games to start with, and therefore I wouldn't dream of making a prediction.
Okay, well, we leave it there, mate, and no doubt come back to this subject in the not-too-distant future. Thanks for your time.
See you then. Bye-bye.
And that was Tom Cannon, who I spoke to earlier in the week over the situation at Liverpool Football Club. I'm joined in the studio this week by John Haynes, the International Coaching Academy, and Malcolm Kennedy, the Liverpool City Council Cabinet Member for Regeneration. And Malcolm, although we're not going to discuss any further the wherewithal about the financial implications of the potential takeover at the football club, it does seem pretty apparent that whatever the new ownership is eventually takes place there, the idea of them building a new stadium is not necessarily going to be a priority. And that, of course, impacts on the regeneration of a big area of Liverpool.
Well, it hasn't been made clear to me as yet whether the new owners would be keen to go down the route that's already been set out and which planning permission has been granted and is part of a wide regeneration scheme in Anfield. There was a piece in The Echo on which I made comment in this week, and which I had to remind people that this was not just a stadium, that Anfield is not a stadium, it's a place where people live. Mm. And that's what, as a city council, we have to bear in mind as well.
Mm. It's difficult, isn't it, for politicians in our city to deal with the football clubs because they are, let's face it, sacrosanct, aren't they, in terms of people being prepared to accept criticism of the way in which they're run. And, you know, the interests of the football club are always paramount in these situations as far as most supporters are concerned. And yet the point that you make there is a very well-made one, because I go to Anfield, I go to Goodison Park, and the whole area of Walton, we talked earlier about the transformation of Liverpool city centre, and absolutely, yes, spot on. But the suburbs of Liverpool that look as though they've been untouched through all that regeneration.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are where we are, and Liverpool's stadium is currently where it is, and Everton Stadium is currently where it is. If you were building stadia now, you wouldn't be building them in back streets. I mean, I think that goes without saying. And but if you have them where you are, you can't redevelop the stadium without it being part of a wider regeneration for the whole area. I may ask you a question, is whether you would want to buy a house next to a football stadium. Mm. I don't think I would. I wouldn't particularly want thousands of people coming past my front door every day. Mm. But the stadium is where it is, and the plans that have been worked out have been about a comprehensive regeneration of Anfield, a regeneration of the park, a regeneration of the living areas, and the stadium is the centrepiece for that. If there was any going back on that, it would take a fundamental rethink. It would need new planning permissions, and again, the planning committee is again an independent body. I think there would be some difficulties in going back from that. just to put in planning terms. And it would certainly be a great letdown for the people of Anfield. And as I say, I have to have confidence at the moment that any new owners are not just buying into the idea of Liverpool FC, but they're buying into the regeneration of Anfield as well.
Mm. How patient are the council prepared to be with Liverpool, given the fact that that plan and permission was granted an awfully long time ago now?
I think we have to be patient. I think the fact is that we can't blame either the people of Anfield, the people of Liverpool, for the failings of Hicks and Gillette. I mean, there is an awkward situation that the club have, and Liverpool City Council would want to cooperate in this situation. Mm. We want the best out of this.
John, come to you because, you know, as a fellow Blue, we nonetheless recognise the importance Liverpool Football Club has to the economy of the city, if nothing else. Joe Anderson recently raised the spectre once again and was joined by Kenny Dalglish, in fact, in saying that perhaps the time has come to look at a shared stadium. Something that you think would be worth exploring?
I just believe, once again, Frank, it's about business. Too many decisions are based on emotion. People make decisions. The mess Liverpool are in now because they made a bad, bad decision years ago by letting these Americans into it. They got carried away. They got the emotion. Possibly it was a bit of greed, whatever happened. But that's the situation they're in now. But I just believe when it's in business, you've got to keep the emotions out of it. And facts don't lie. Facts don't lie. There's a lot of people in the city now because they got carried away with the property boom. They bought properties, they remortgaged the houses, and suddenly it's gone. They didn't have the foresight to say, what's the crisis going to hit us? And they're losing their homes, they're losing the pensions, they're losing everything because the decision at the time was based on emotion. We're into a situation now, let's keep the emotions out of it, Everton, Liverpool. Have we got the money? Have we got the foresight? Have you got the financial clout in years to come to afford new stadiums? And if the fact is no, we've got to have a joint venture. We've got to keep all the egos out of us, all the past history, because we're trying to do something for the future. And I'm just concerned now, if emotions get involved again, possibly we're going to remortgage, we're going to have huge debts around, and we could leave a legacy in years to come, like a Portsmouth. So I think, let's look at the facts, let's keep the emotions out of it, and if we've got to do it, let's just get on and do it.
Mm. I think the point Malcolm made there as well about where the stadium are now, you would never dream of putting football stadium in those particular locations. No. Now, I'm not aware of any discussions that may or may not be taking place at Everton at the moment, because clearly Goodison Park is a tired old stadium, as much as I love it. They are desperately in need of a new home, come what may. You know, if Everton's going to grow as a business. Are there any sites out there, Malcolm, that you think would be an attractive proposition to Everton if they could manage to find the wherewithal and support to finance it?
I think if Everton had the money to finance their own stadium, then there would be no problem in finding a site for Everton. I think the issue has always been with the Everton Stadium is its reliance on a retail element. And the problem then in finding a site is what impact, not that the football stadium has, but the retail element has on other retail areas of the city, including the city centre. There are plenty of sites in which a ground could be found, a place could be found for a ground, but is there an area where a place can be found for the retail element? Mm. That's the issue. So, yes, the short answer to your question is yes, there are sites, but there are issues with those sites.
It's the financing of the stadium.
It's the financing of the stadium, which is the main issue.
Mm. Well, one of the people who was very much an advocate of a joint stadium for Everton Liverpool and actually received death threats for his troubles was the chief executive of the North West Development Agency, Steve Broomhead, who announced that he was retiring from that role. Malcolm, I know that you've been employed by the development agency. You know Stephen very well. Do you think he can look back at his time at the agency with pride? Do you think he's done a good job?
Absolutely, absolutely I do. And I think that Liverpool should be thankful for the work that's been done under him and his predecessor Mike Shields over the years. I think we've benefited greatly from the North West Development Agency, and Liverpool would not be the same place today without its assistance. On a personal level, I wish Steve the very best. He would have been an excellent person to head up Liverpool, for instance, but he did tell me some while ago that he wouldn't be applying himself. I believe he's going on a cruise with his wife, and I hope he has a wonderful time on that. Yes, I think he can be proud of what he's done. I think the agency can be proud of what they've done, and I'll be sorry to see him go.
John, the development agency, and I know again you'll have met Steve Broome at a number of downtown Liverpool events,
yes.
If nothing else. What's your take on the performance of that organisation?
Well, I think 80-20 rule, Frank, the percentage of they did a very, very good job. They did make some fundamentals mistakes earlier on again. And I think with Stephen, with his drive and his personality and his leadership skills, he can look back now with a lot of satisfaction and say, I've done a good job. I don't think he's done a fantastic job, but he was always an honest man, a direct man. And every time I met him, he was very courteous, and he did have this skill of listening in depth to you. But I would say now, like all of us, any job you're in, any career you're in, any position you hold, you've got to look down and say, what legacy would I like to leave when I finish this? And unfortunately, we've got a few city leaders who will look back and say, what a bloody legacy I've left, diabolical. But other city leaders will say, good. But I think Steve Broome has left a damn good legacy. And he's got to go away with his wife for a well-earned rest, because he was a 24/7 man, and look back and say, I give it 100%. I was committed. I'd done a good job, and good luck to him in his retirement.
Mm. He was an incredibly hard-working character. I mean, yeah. I know that, you know, some days you'd speak to him in the morning. He was up in Cumbria, and then he'd be back in the evening for a meeting in Lancashire, and he'd been to Manchester at the same time as well, in the same day as well. And he had an incredible knowledge of the diversity of the North West region and what its needs and wants were, and seemed to have this knack of being able to identify where the real priorities lay. And I remember when the agency decided they needed to get involved with the capital of culture, when that looked as though it was going to go off the rails. And people shouldn't forget the importance of the role that people like Steve Broomhead and Brian Gray and other members of the agency team played in making 2008 such a fantastic, successful year. Yeah. I know a lot of other people got the bouquets around that time, but Steve and, as I say, Brian Gray and his team done an awful lot. And I join the chaps in the studio in wishing Steve all the very, very best, whatever he decides to do in the future. Very quickly before we wrap up today, it is the derby this afternoon. John, quick prediction.
Well, I think it's time Liverpool players get out the comfort zone and show their bit of character and stop hiding behind what's going on. It really has been diabolical, like the England players. But I would say, as an Evertonian, we will win 3-0, Frank.
Malcolm, you're going to have a go here?
Everybody in Liverpool who knows me knows I'm a strong Newcastle fan. I haven't been born there in the 50s. I'm always thrilled by the excitement of it, and it'll be a draw.
Well, on that note, sitting on the fence, Councillor Malcolm Kennedy, we'll leave you. Have a great week. Don't do anything Guy wouldn't do.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.